Hi, this is Dave Stachowiak, host of the Coaching for Leaders podcast, and I am here with Bonnie for our, I guess we're calling this a second lesson in a series on leading through crisis. You may have heard me air a first announcement about why we're doing this a few days ago, and I promised in that announcement that myself, Bonnie, perhaps a few others in our global listening community would come to this situation we find ourselves in, navigating this virus, with hopefully some useful perspective and mindsets for you. And particularly today, we are going to do some talking about leadership mindsets. So first of all, Bonnie, welcome back. Glad to have you here.
I'm glad to be here. During this time, my one just every single day thought that I have is how grateful I am for you, for getting to be partnered with someone like you in parenting, in our marriage, in a lot of our work things that overlap too. I'm just so grateful for you.
Oh, thank you. I feel the exact same way. And it has been quite a journey the last few days and week or so for all of us in different ways. And we have been pushed in new ways that we weren't anticipating, of course. And I know many of you are as well. And there is no shortage of advice in the world right now on how to do things. We thought we would take a bigger picture perspective with this lesson, though, and rather than jumping in on some of the more tactical things that I know many of you are asking about, how to manage virtual teams, virtual meetings, we are going to do that. That is coming. But today, a few mindsets we thought we'd dive in on of what are some of the things that maybe would be helpful for us to be thinking of, some of the key mindsets, and perhaps even a few distinctions here. And the first one that has come up for me, Bonnie, just thinking about this past week or so, talking to a lot of our Academy members, talking to folks in our community, is this moment we find ourselves in, at least in the online world, where everyone has tons of advice. And that's on running virtual meetings, how to manage people virtually. It is ridiculous how much has been posted. It's one of the reasons we're actually not doing that right away. And I'm struck by the distinction between advice and giving people the space to do a bit of listening. And I'm wondering what you've experienced this past week or so as you've been navigating this with faculty and students at your university.
At my university, we actually have been more prescriptive than we might normally be. There is something in higher education called academic freedom. So people who teach in a higher education context get a little prickly if you start to tell them more precisely how to do their jobs. We have wonderful teachers at my institution. They have lots of different approaches that they might use, but this is one of those things where there's like 3,700 different ways to do something using our tools, the technology that we use for teaching. So we're deciding on one or two ways and communicating those. So we're actually giving more advice, I think, than we normally would in our roles. But I know the other part of it is just making space for listening. And we've been doing a lot of that too. In fact, I just put some sessions up where we do need to get better equipped in some cases using some web conferencing tools, but I'm calling this Zoom and Bloom. Zoom, yeah, let's teach you about the particular web conferencing tool that we're using at my institution. But the Bloom part is kind of like the rest of the stuff. Where do we need some growth and some development to support the time that we are in? And a lot of that is just kind of giving people space for them to share what their perspectives are, having that space for listening. And, you know, that's a big part of my teaching approach. It's a big part of many of my colleagues. We just had a session a couple of days ago, and we have a few slides that we're presenting. We tried to limit it to about 5 slides per 40-minute session, but then leave room for using the breakout room so they could have some dialogue and get a chance to share their own perspectives. But it was so lovely. People just started to, what they were sharing, what was bringing them hope right now. And one person shared some verses that they find very special to them. And we ended up just, that person just read to us for, it was probably, I don't know, 4 minutes of him just reading to us. We didn't plan for that. It was really beautiful. And they were words that were very special to everyone. I could see on a lot of the web conferencing tools, I call it the Brady Bunch view, where you can see multiple faces there. Yeah. And I just saw it bringing such peace and such comfort to people. And it was really a special time. So I really am a firm believer. We're actually, like I said, giving, when I say more advice, being more prescriptive. Here's one way to do this. Don't overwhelm them with 37 ways. Here's one way you could do this. It's our recommendation. It's the best approach that we have found. but also leaving lots of space for listening.
And I'm thinking about even the distinction between maybe advice and being directive. We don't want to overwhelm people with too much advice. Mm-hmm. And I like what you said of like, you know, here's one or two things to do. And when you're in crisis mode, and we have folks in our listening community who are truly in crisis mode in their organizations right now because their customer base has completely disappeared within the last week or two. And when you are in crisis mode as a leader, that is a time that is appropriate to be more directive, right? Because when there is the absence of what do we do and no context of how to handle a situation, having someone step in who is more directive is really helpful. So there's on that side, we're all going to find ourselves doing some more of that in many situations. And also this distinction of also finding the time to listen more. And I love what you just described there, Bonnie, of doing both of those, right? So in some situations, you're going to give a lot of direction on, okay, here's how we got to do this. We don't have 6 months to figure out the best systems. We've got 2 weeks. Here's a couple of options. Here's where we're going to go. And still taking that 4 or 5 minutes to stop and to listen. And that's something that's missing a bit right now. In fact, in our academy, one of our members volunteered this week to host some listening sessions for our community internally that we're now doing in order to give folks the space to not necessarily get advice or to hear more details, but just to be heard with how they're feeling and what's going on for them. And if we can do a bit of both of those and put on those hats at the right times, I think that's going to help out a lot of us in thinking about how can we really be useful to people in our organizations right now and moving things forward.
Something that goes so closely aligned with this is once we start doing that listening is acknowledging what we've heard and really naming those things. And there's kind of, it actually is going to fall over into our next one, spoiler alert, which is humor, but just this humor around I see you or I feel seen. That's being said a lot on social media right now where someone expresses some kind of a challenge that they're having and somebody replies, I feel totally seen. So just being able to name those things for people. And a researcher that's coming up for me a lot these days is Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. She's the person who named the stages of grief. And in fact, she may not even have used the word stages because that would seem to imply that we go through these in order. And I'm sure anyone listening to this has recognized that we pop back and forth between them quite a bit. So it starts with denial, anger, bargaining, depression, acceptance, and hope. And I've noticed, I mean, these are patterns that I see emerging within my own life. I see it emerging within the life of our family. And then I also see that within the life of my colleagues and my friends. So being able to name those things and say, wow, it really sounds like that's just been so hard for you. I'm just so sorry you're experiencing that pain right now. Just being able to name those things and help people feel seen is one of the most powerful gifts we can give as leaders right now.
One reminder for all of us at this time, and I'm speaking to myself here too, Bonnie, is that it's okay for people to feel however they feel, right? And it is dangerous to go down the journey of making judgments for others of like, oh, they should or should not feel the way they feel because of their situation, good or bad, or their industry that they're in, or having kids at home or not, or all of those things that are so many variables at this stage. People feel however they feel. The person who is grieving, having lost the opportunity to go on a really special cruise that they'd been planning for 6 months, that grief and that pain is real, just as the grief and pain is real for someone who has lost a job and perhaps a job that will never return. Are those the same thing? No. But the feeling can very much be the same. And the level of grief that that person has can be very much that same level of grief. And so one thing around acknowledgement that we can all do for ourselves and for each other is just to give ourselves a bit of permission to feel however we feel and not to attempt to put judgment on that, because we all go through these stages in different ways and different situations. And the thing that I'm finding quite unusual is I'm used to talking to people all over the world every single day because of our academy community and because of the work that I do. And I am used to people being in all different places and all different contexts. And to talk to people and everyone literally dealing with this same issue is very weird, actually. And in a way, it brings us all together, but it's also weird that seeing everyone respond to the same situation, but handling it in very different ways and it playing out in very different ways. And so I think all that to say, if we can come to a place of just acknowledging where people are and getting into a conversation and setting aside some of the assumptions we might have because of a person's industry, because of their age, because of what we know about them from the past, if we are able to set some of those assumptions aside and start with a question like, what's on your mind? Or how you doing today? And asking some of those open-ended questions, that will help us to acknowledge where people are a little bit better than we might otherwise do.
I mentioned the spoiler alert that humor was coming up next, and I have been on more web conferences than I have ever been in my entire life, and I use web conferencing quite a bit in my roles. I saw a tweet from someone named Derek T. Muller, and he writes, "Academic friends, Isaac Newton discovered calculus while in a quarantine. William Shakespeare wrote King Lear while in a quarantine. You will learn how to unmute your computer microphone during a Zoom meeting while in quarantine."
Nice.
I have so enjoyed so much of the humor that has come up. And some of this you mentioned, Dave, is more contextual humor. In fact, the institution where I teach, the men's volleyball team, sent out a video of them. There's a song, I forgot the artist, but it's the song is called A Thousand Miles, and it's kind of writing about being far away from someone. So of course, all the teammates are not together. They're all in their respective homes. And so it's all of them just like singing to each other, lip syncing this song. And you know, doing like one guy is in a bathtub full of water, fully clothed, and lip syncs one of the lines of the song as he's getting out of the bath. I mean, it's absolutely, absolutely hysterical. And that brought me so much joy, just thinking about ways in which people are bringing community through humor and through these connections and just using their creativity to do so has really been fun. And by the way, back to our last point, it does help us realize our lives in some cases are not anywhere near as hard as we're trying to pretend like they are. I'm very careful, by the way, you will not see any messages from me about how hard it is to be in a house with my spouse, which first of all, it's not hard, but it's like, even if it was, that's not something that I feel like I would want to share in a context like that, and not really sharing about the challenges with the children. And for me, the specific line around humor is if it's mean-spirited humor toward them. Like, I can use self-deprecating humor toward myself, and that's acceptable to me, but I don't want to be using mean-spirited humor that, you know, is making fun of my own family. That's just not something I do. And I get it. Everyone has their ways of venting, and that's just the rule that I have set up for myself. And I certainly don't want it to sound like I'm judging other people doing that. That's just for myself, what I feel good about looking at a year later, 5 years later, however long this stuff lives.
Yeah.
Forever.
Oh, it's always hard when there's real pain going on in the world, as of course there always is, but it's more apparent in this moment. And talking about humor, and yet you have to have an outlet. You have to find some humor in some of these situations. One of my favorite moments was when this all really kind of went down, Bonnie, like a week and a half ago. I picked up the kids from school, their last day of school, that Friday, whatever it was. And we did the, oh my gosh, we've got to go to the grocery store and buy a ton of stuff because everyone was buying stuff out of the grocery store. So we go in and I warn the kids in advance, like, the grocery store is going to look really different than what you're expected to it looking like. And there's going to be shelves empty. There's going to be tons of people there. And we're going to buy more stuff than we normally do. So I'm going through this whole thing and we walk in and we've got our card and, you know, they picked up on this really quickly. Like, they see me buying stuff that I don't normally buy and we're adding in things. So, you know, they're smart. All of a sudden they're like, "Daddy, could we get graham crackers? Could we get cookies?" And I'm like, "Yeah, sure. Throw it in. Yeah, sure. Throw it in." And so, you know, it didn't take them long to realize they could get a big win out of this situation. So we get in the cereal aisle and we're walking, we're trying to find Cheerios and there's no Cheerios left. And so our son, who's a second grader, looks at me and he goes, "Dad, why don't we get some Lucky Charms?" And I'm like, no, we're not getting Lucky Charms. I don't care if there's a global pandemic. There are certain places that I am not going to go as a parent. I am not buying Lucky Charms. I'm sorry. If you work for General Mills, we buy many of your other products, but I'm not buying Lucky Charms. And I'm not judging you if you do buy Lucky Charms for your kids. I'm just saying that is a place as a parent I'm not willing to go. So he looks at me with this serious face and he says, Dad, we're going to be off school next week. Next week is St. Patrick's Day. We need a way to celebrate St. Patrick's Day. And he points to the box and there's the little leprechaun smiling back with this little rainbow. And he turns around and both of our kids in unison smile at me. And I'm like, you, my son, you have earned a box of Lucky Charms. And so now we have been enjoying Lucky Charms here over the last week. And he's so clever sometimes. Oh my gosh, he's so fast. Like I never saw that coming. But it's just one of those moments, like you just have to enjoy these moments that you didn't see coming.
I feel a desperate need to provide some disclaimers at this point. The story that Dave is telling was well before they were telling us not to go to grocery stores, and well before they were telling us of the situation, which all, by the way, all reminds me of an area of study called systems thinking. But what's happening with people going and buying more toilet paper than they need, more Lucky Charms than they need, more everything than they need is actually creating a shortage that didn't need to be there in the first place. So that was before we started to become more aware of that. So now if we do need to do groceries, then we are going to the grocery store, just one of us, Dave or I, and we have the most incredible in-depth, compulsive means for transporting said groceries or food into our house and just detoxing everything. So like almost wearing oven mitts to like remove things from, and we've got the whole scrub down after things have been removed from their packaging, that kind of thing. So I just want to let people know we are following advice. Our children have not set foot in a grocery store since...
In 2 weeks, yeah. So this was quite a while ago. And also, food is safe, just so people don't get panicked. Yes. On groceries. We're just, you know, I am married to a germaphobe, so
who
I am...
Who would that be?
Yeah. Thank so you. Anyway, so I'm being mindful of the normal things, and then I'm also trying to be careful and also make sure that you are in a good mental place on things, so... Talking through my procedures I'm using for decontaminating things, also very helpful.
And this is a time when we are both so incredibly thankful for the experts that are out there. I mean, healthcare professionals risking their lives. I mean, we could go on and on. We're so grateful for the advice that they're giving us and the information that we're getting about how we can be supportive as part of a broader system where the actions that we take can actually have an effect in a positive way or a negative way in ways that we perhaps haven't even thought of before. I mean, it's just, this is an opportunity for us to do this as a society and think through those things. I took humor and I took it to a not so humorous place really fast.
Kind of a dark place, yeah.
Really,
so we're going to get out of that. So
we've talked
listening, we've talked acknowledgement, we've talked humor, although not as humorous as we probably intended.
Wait till they see that video link, though. I'll send it to you. You can put that in the show notes. Wait until they see that, though.
Probably going to solve every problem everyone has at the moment. Yes. It's just they watch a volleyball player in a bathtub with his clothes on, and then it'll be all better.
Mm-hmm.
Structure is something that has been top of mind for me. And this is something that I think that's useful advice that I've seen a lot. I think it really works well for us, Bonnie. It particularly works well with kids, which many of us find ourselves in the situation where, oh my gosh, our kids are going to be home for the next several months, probably, and doing work with us, not the way any of us intended, but here we are. And one thing that is really helpful is having some sense of structure on schedules, both for ourselves and for our family members. And this is a transition for those who are used to going into an office, following the meeting protocol of the day, getting situated and scheduled, having the commute in. Is creating some of that structure for yourself is very useful on helping you to continue to stay in a place where you can be productive and you're not changing context on absolutely everything. So if you don't already have a wake-up time, a get-to-work time, some structure as far as just, you know, maybe even getting dressed the way you normally get dressed if you were going to go to the office, that kind of structure can be really, really useful to you. And if you have kids at home and they are of any age past, you know, 3 or 4 years old, having some structure during the day is really, really useful. A free-for-all is not something that works well for us as adults. It definitely doesn't work well for kids. So even if you just take a couple parts of the day and structure them, that's a really good starting point. It works really well for our kids. It's one of the reasons that primary education is so well structured as far as time, because that tends to provide a lot of support for kids and helps us to make good transitions during the day. So if you haven't already done that for yourself or for those in your family, it's certainly a great place to start.
William Bridges is one of my favorite all-time authors on the subject of change. And he talks about this structure as it relates to change. We have all gone through massive change. He reminds us that all change begins not with beginnings, but with endings. And back to what we talked about earlier, some of that is mourning some things that we have lost. We've lost some of our structures. We've lost some of our, in some cases, even our sense of identity. I work with people who are very much in roles that they perceive as only being able to be fulfilled with one's hands or one's physical work or physical presence. And so there's a lot going on here. So he talks about then, after that phase is over, going into what he has called the neutral zone. And we've spoke about the neutral zone before on the podcast, but this is a time where the beginning hasn't started yet. We don't have firm structures. We don't have even a sense of what the new thing is going to look like yet. We're in the neutral zone. And in people's lives, a lot of Indigenous and other cultures will actually mark these times. You've probably heard stories of people going off into the wilderness and maybe even having their faces painted or donning certain costumes to represent that change, that neutral zone in a person's life. Many of our cultures have those kinds of a thing, of a marking of that point in someone's life. But then even in seasons of change, like we're all experiencing now, there's this neutral zone. And so his recommendation around systems is, or around structure, is to set up temporary systems. And Dave and I have really been having to do that. Our systems right now at home do not look like what our idealized version of this new life looks like. We are living in day-tight compartments, which is a Dale Carnegie principle, where it's like we can just barely look at today. And so we have some systems that are set up, but I would really call them temporary systems, such that we know that we can even get better at this, because this is likely to be a very long haul. So how can we make improvements and have what Chris Argyris calls double loop learning? We need to have that as a part of our regular practices. Don't just learn something, but then go back and ask again, how can we make that better, and get other people involved, including the smaller people in our household that have some things to say. And one of the systems that Dave talked about was put your clothes on. And I know this, but you may not realize it. He doesn't literally mean clothes. Our kids need agency right now. Their whole world has been rocked just in the ways that ours have as well. And they have decided they're going to wear pajamas every single day. Since all of this went down, they have not put normal clothes on a single time. I did for a moment there think maybe it could be helpful that they could wear the normal uniform that their school has for them. Oh no. Oh no, 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 no. That was out the window right away. And I think that that's healthy. There is a system that you need to wear clothes, but to us, that's translating to the children, that's translating to pajamas, and that's okay. Socks and shoes if you're going to go outside, you know, all of this. But we know that these temporary systems, if we use that double loop learning, and we're learning not just for ourselves, but also organizationally within our group that we are leading here, we can even have those systems get better to whatever is next on this grand adventure of a messy pandemic.
I'm glad you mentioned William Bridges. And I was thinking about that when we were talking about acknowledgement earlier, and that we're all going through some stage of grief in this, because we've all had an ending. We had an ending of the world as we knew it. And for some people, it's a massive, huge change. And for some people, it is some more minor contextual changes. But I think for all of us, as weeks and months go forward, it is going to be a really big contextual change. And there's going to be a lot of endings and neutral zones that are coming up for a lot of us. And because of that, another piece that's really important is intentionality right now. For those who have not worked exclusively in the online world or not worked mostly in the online world, you're probably already struck in the last week or two of it's just you feel a lot more disconnected to people than you normally do. And I've been trying to think back 5-6 years now of time. I've been working almost entirely online, and I find that I have to be a lot more intentional about making connections. And so one of the things I would invite you to do if you haven't already done this, and particularly those of you who lead teams, which is many, in fact, most of you who listen to this, is if you're not already, of making an intentional structure for yourself, even if it's not apparent to others, of doing some reach outs and doing the things that you would probably do naturally in a more traditional physical setting, like running into people, saying hi in the morning, the what we traditionally talk, you know, quote unquote, water cooler conversations, right? Those are the kinds of things that many of us are used to doing spontaneously. And it's really hard for that to happen spontaneously in a virtual environment. And so setting up some structures to do that for yourself and for others is really helpful. And whether it's setting up a Slack channel to have a virtual water cooler conversation, or whether it means having, you know, just checking in with everyone on your team once a day and doing a, hey, how you doing? Or in my case, I haven't literally written it down, Bonnie, but I have four or five people on my kind of mental list that I've been just checking in with, friends that I've been checking in with once every couple of days. And I usually am hitting one to two people a day, more so than I normally would, have just being intentional about making these connections. And it's a little unfortunate, as important as social distancing is right now, it's a little unfortunate that's the term that emerged, because really it's physical distancing what we need. But emotional distance we do not need. In fact, we need more emotional closeness right now than we've ever needed before. And yet we need to be more intentional about that, of really taking the time to do that. So whatever structure you can have for yourself and for others that can allow a little bit of that intentionality of making those connections, you have to be a little more planned and spontaneous than you might be used to doing, but I think that's huge on helping to keep that emotional connection with the people that are closest to you.
We have explored really a season for listening and acknowledging and naming how people are feeling. We've talked a bit about how humor can really nourish us during these difficult times. We have talked about temporary systems or structures to help us navigate. And Dave just shared with us how we can be more intentional in showing up in other people's lives and letting us know that we care about them and we want to know how they are. The last thing is to have some good, healthy boundaries for ourselves. I take a lot of pride in having read every single page that was assigned to me when I got my master's degree, and almost every single page that was assigned in our doctorate, but there was one book that it might have just very well been the time.
Wait, hang on a second. You read every single page?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. In our doctorates. By the way, Dave and I met, if you don't know
As you can tell, I did not read every single page.
Dave and I met while getting our master's together. That's how we met each other.
In a teams building class.
In a team building class. Isn't
we
that adorable?
We got an A.
Nailed it. So in the doctorate, I did not read a book, and I don't know if it was just the season, but I felt like I was reading the same thing over and over and over again. And again, could just be that time in my life when I was trying to read it. But it's by Daniel Goleman. It's called Social Intelligence. And it's a lengthy book, as I recall. I think it might have been like 500 or 600 pages. And I've got it all. Of course, I haven't read all 600 pages, but I've got it all synthesized for you. Our emotions are contagious. That's the research that he repeats what seemed like at the time over and over and over again. Even though I didn't read the entire book, I believe it. I feel that in my own life. I witness it in other people's lives. One of the people on my team, she has taken the StrengthsFinder, and one strength that is her number one on her list, positivity. I get around her, and it doesn't matter the mood that I am in. I walk away from those conversations a transformed woman. And I can see the power of her emotions and the way she carries herself in my life. I am so grateful for her. And so we want to be thinking a little bit about boundaries, assuming that you believe the 600 pages or so of research. I'm kidding, the research is much longer than that. That was him synthesizing the research on social intelligence. But this idea that our emotions are contagious. We are, as leaders, going to find ourselves needing to be present for and lead people who are in hard spaces, who are grieving, who are angry, who are negative, who are fatalistic. I mean, we're going to get that as leaders. So we need to set up some boundaries for ourselves, both in terms of our time and how we're spending it, in terms of people and who we're spending time with. I'm not saying as leaders we get to just not show up for those conversations. I'm saying if we're more intentional about balancing that with other conversations and spending time with people that are more life-giving, that can be helpful to us. And I know that one of the things Dave wanted to bring up here around boundaries has to do with the time and the amount of time that we're working. Candidly, both of us are working a lot of hours right now. So for me, what boundaries looks like in terms of time spent working, I haven't felt like I wanted to make the choice to be very, very precise on exactly what I'm willing to do. I'm an exempt employee. That means I don't get paid overtime. And my role, the institution has really been leaning on me to lead us from taking our mostly in-person classes and moving them to online. And I felt that responsibility. I felt good about it. I felt honored that I would be trusted in helping to navigate this change for the organization. But here's my boundary. So it's not about I won't work before this hour and I won't work after this hour. That's not how I've chosen to navigate this time. But to me, it's every single day I am getting outside this house for a 30-minute walk or jog or whatever that ends up looking like on a given day. That's a non-negotiable boundary for me. I know how healthy it is for me to have that sun get me that vitamin D. I know how healthy it is for me to get those endorphins going, and that's a non-negotiable. Then the other non-negotiable is, to the extent that I'm as a human capable of doing this, but that my kids don't get to feel like every time that they come in a room, I am going to admonish them because I'm on a meeting. So they did come in and interrupt a few of my meetings that I was actually leading and teaching a workshop. And so I'm just being very careful about, you know what, the people on that session will understand, which, by the way, they think it's adorable. And they all in the chat box, can you see the way she talks to her daughter? Oh. So, yeah, I kind of got a little bit that way. But we do still need to have boundaries. Like I would tell kids, I'm recording something, and you know, they need to understand that we aren't available to them 24/7. We like to let them know who to come talk to. And I realize not everybody has a who to come talk to, because if we've got a single parent who's listening right now, you don't have to go talk to someone else. But depending on the ages of the family members that you're caring for, setting up those boundaries can be really helpful. But to me, when the boundaries are misunderstood because of the ages of our kids, I mean, sadly, I say sarcastically, their entire life is not wrapped up in my calendar and what's on it at any given time and who I'm talking to. That's like a few thoughts that I have around boundaries, and I know Dave has more to share.
Yeah, well, it's funny, as you were mentioning that, I was just thinking about it, and I know this varies a lot with ages of children, but our kids are 6 and 8, so they're of the ages that they can understand some clear expectations on certain things. And our son was on a video conference with a teacher yesterday, and the conference fell out for whatever reason. And she texted me like 10 minutes in. I was doing something else, and I didn't know that this conference had ended. It's super important that he's doing it. And I came into the room, and I'm like, what happened? Like, why didn't you come get me? And he's like, I didn't want to interrupt your meeting. He just assumed I was in a meeting because that's what I've been in meetings for the last week or two. And I got to thinking like, well, of course he would have said, like, how would he know, like, that he could come interrupt, like, you know, I haven't made that clear. And so nothing's ever going to work perfectly, but to the extent that we can know what some of our boundaries are, and they're going to be different in every situation for all of us, but also to verbalize those boundaries is super helpful. And maybe it means, you know, taking time to work out, or maybe it means not working the crazy hours that a lot of us are being expected for right now. And of course, people are in the opposite situation too, of not having that much work. So being mindful of that can be super useful. I think I'll leave us with one other situation that happened this week, Bonnie. Our kids go to chapel every day when they're at school. And so we've been trying to, most days, create some semblance of that consistency going in their lives. So we have been putting a device out in the morning, and we'll go on YouTube and look for like a good, you know, chapel song or worship song, and then do a Bible reading, and then we'll, you know, have some conversation about it. And so the other morning, our son says to me, Dad, for our chapel music this morning, we should do a Beatles song. And by the way, I love the Beatles, and I could listen to the Beatles pretty much anytime, anywhere. But I was like, hey, the Beatles are not worship music. We're not going to listen to a Beatles song for chapel. And then he looks at me, he's like, well, yeah, there's worship music. The song, the one with Mary, Mother Mary. And I'm like, Mother Mary, what on earth is he talking about? Because I was tired, I hadn't slept well, I'm worried about the world. And all of a sudden it dawns on me, he's talking about Let It Be. And so we played Let It Be for our chapel service that morning. And it was the perfect song. So we're going to continue on this journey with you through this course. As I mentioned in the first audio from about a week ago, we'll have this all available here on the public feed, at least for a while. And I'm also putting this inside our free membership portal. It will be under the course Leading Through Crisis. So if you'd like to pull up any of these lessons as we go, feel free. And Bonnie and I will be back with more here in the not too distant future on some more of the tactical things now that we've talked through a few mindsets. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you back for the next lesson.